people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. Tonight I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my countrymen, they're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking on the fight beside me. Running down with life, I'm fighting and falling down the deep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my countryman. You're walking on the fight beside me. Just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. And they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fight inside of me. Yeah, walking on the fight inside me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in the fog and doubt. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You run down my country, man. You walking on the fight beside of me. Yeah, walking on the fight beside me. Running down with life, I'm fighting. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You run down my country, man. You walking on right beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fight inside of me. And that's the name of this program here on White Resistance Radio .com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. And of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Today I'm going to play an interview I did last Friday with Jim Rizzoli, a videographer from the United States who deals primarily with World War II issues and, of course, free speech issues. We all have to because we're all under attack. Well, this is the interview I did with Jim Rizzoli. Do enjoy it, and I'll be back to sign off at the end of this show. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on The Fight Inside of Me here on Light Resistance Radio.
Hi, everyone. Jim Rizzoli here. Today we are in Toronto, Canada, and we have a special guest that we're going to talk with. It is Paul Fromm, and Paul is representing CAFE, that's what you call it?
Yes, sir.
All right, and maybe you can tell the folks what that stands for?
It stands for Canadian Association for Free Expression.
All right, and we know how good that's going up in Canada these days, right?
it's uphill. We win a few, we lose a lot.
All right. Well, anyway, we were here in April of last year, and the last thing that was going on with us was with you actually, with James Sears case. So maybe you can update us on what happened, because we left and the things that happened with the case. He didn't go to jail, as far as I know, so maybe you can tell us what's going on there.
Well, he didn't end up, okay. And the case goes on. Yes, Canada is very proud to be a country just like communist China and North Korea, where we put writers in jail. But we can't keep black gunmen in jail. Regularly kill other black gunmen, but boy, we're good at putting writers in jail. So anyway, the James Sears Germain case. Dealt with their satirical publication called Your War News, which did a lot of considerable articles on radical feminism, the LGBTQ thing, and what really annoyed the Jewish lobby, of course, the Holocaust. And they had a lot of stock characters. They were very funny in their cartoons. Anyway, they were charged under Canada's hate law. And when you were up here last, you had heard that they'd been convicted in January. And then when you were up here in April, it was supposed to be the sentencing. Well, Dr. Sears was able to really upset things at the sentencing. Usually the sentencing is fairly straightforward. The judge looks at a couple of reports and on the sentencing day takes those into consideration and announces his sentence. And but before that, he asks the prisoner, do you have anything to say? The prisoner gets a chance to say. And usually the prisoner has nothing to say. Well, I'm sorry, or I messed up my life, and I apologize to my wife and my church and my children. I don't let everybody down. Or if they're smart, to say nothing. By the way, Dr. Sears checked American law, and American law, which is our law too, under the British common law, along with something called the allocution. So the prisoner has the right to allocute. So Dr. Sears thought, what I will do is I will provide reasons why the sentence should basically be nothing, or what you call it, an unconditional discharge. In other words, yes, you committed the crime, but there's no reason to punish you at all. So he made the argument that Your War News really is a safety bet. And he gave some examples of people who had been very angry about something and nobody paid attention. There was one Palestinian fellow, the Israeli Defense Force had crippled his cousin. The sniper just killed, but crippled his cousin. And the fellow came to Dr. Sears and said, I'm so angry, I'm going to take some spray paint or something, I'm going to go to a synagogue to face the place. And Sears said, well, look, if you do that and you're caught, you go to jail and it won't go well with you. So, I'll write up the story. And he did. And the fellow calmed down. The most dramatic thing that Dr. Sears did was at the sentencing hearing. At the intermission, a fellow, a tall, gaunt guy with a cane, came into the court with a handler, your person cousin guides him. He sat down right beside me in the front row. And I was looking at this guy. And just before the judge came in a very loud voice, he started singing an off-color version of the Canadian National Anthem. Oh, who is this fellow? And then just as the judge came in, he said, this fellow, the blind guy, says, if you want to get laid, go to a whorehouse. If you want to get fucked, go to a courthouse. I wonder, who is this guy? Dr. Sears says, and then the guy lurches past the bar. There's a wooden barrier, and that's the bar. Now, in general, unless you're called as a witness, you aren't supposed to go past the bar. So we don't know what's happening. He lurches forward with his handler, and Dr. Sears says, to the judge, I'd like to introduce you to my friend Jonathan. He's the blind guy. And so he says, Jonathan was born, somebody lost sight of one eye, but he began to have a cataract in the other eye, and he went to an ophthalmologist to have it operated on. Well, the guy botched the operation, he's blind. So Jonathan went to the College of Ophthalmology. Nobody was interested. He went to the College of Physicians and Surgeons. Nobody wanted to hear him. He went to the press. Nobody was interested. So at some point, he met Dr. Sears, and he said, I finally got some acid, and I'm going to find that doctor, and I'm going to blind him. Do what he did to me. And Dr. Sears said pretty much what he said to the Palestinian fellow. Well, look, you'll end up going to jail, and it'll be very hard on you. You're a blind guy. You'll be in jail, and you're blind. And he said, listen, I'll write up your story. And he did. And now the blind guy, Jonathan, stands on street corners with photocopies of his story. So Dr. Sears basically took your war news, defused the situation. And he says, I'm giving a voice to a lot of people who are angry. Now, I said, it's a brilliant argument. The judge didn't know what to do with it. So it's completely derailed the sentencing. And Dr. Sears said, I fired my lawyer because he threw the case. So the judge says, I'm postponing sentencing. I come back, and I guess it was about a month or so, and with more arguments. And so, to make a long story short, there were a couple more court appearances. And finally, Dr. Sears presented through emails, documented that that his lawyer repeatedly refused to follow his instructions, including calling witnesses. Now, I was very worried through the trial, because I've been through a fair number of cases in Canada, and I know how the game is usually played. The prosecution or the Crown will first of all, you establish identity, but that was not a question here. Dr. Sears said, yes, I'm the editor, so that wasn't really the issue. Well, then the Crown will call an expert witness to say that the words in this publication, or these words here, promoted hatred against one of the privileged groups. In this case, it was women and Jews, mostly Jews. And so one witness will do that. Witness will do that. And then if you fight it properly as a defense, you counter that with an expert witness who will say, what was said was true. I'm simplifying, but well, we call more witnesses. And Dr. Sears wanted to call E. Michael Jones as an expert. He agreed. And the lawyer actually refused to call. So, in fact, when it came to the trial, the prosecution had two experts. One was a Jew who was an expert on anti-Semitism, or so he said, and a radical feminist who didn't know how to dress. She's a law professor. I mean, gosh, it looked as though she showed up in a tracksuit and a dirty sweatshirt. So she is this lady the cleaning? No, she's the expert witness. I don't think the lawyer was very effective in cross-examining. Yeah. Everything Doug Christie, he'd have left the court in shreds.
Right.
So we didn't have any witnesses. The Crown had two witnesses. One said the words were anti-Semitic, which actually isn't the same thing as promoting hate. Right. You know, you'd be critical of a group without. And I didn't think the lawyer was doing a very good job. But okay, then came time to the summation. The Crown's or the prosecution's witness was lawyer gave about an hour and a quarter outlining of how your war news was willfully promoting hate. Dr. Sears' lawyer was about 15 minutes. He said, your war news is hate speech, but I nearly collapsed. This is the equivalent of a lawyer for a fellow charged with armed robbery saying, well, as a matter of fact, my client was in the bank, he had a mask on, he had a gun, and he did take money. And then, well, but it wasn't that bad, but besides, the bank has lots of money anyway. So, anyway, but he said, well, it wasn't that bad. Yes, it was hate speech, but it wasn't that bad. I thought, are you a moron?
Wow.
The defense wasn't very good. And so he was convicted. So so Dr. Sears was quite right in saying either through incompetence or worse, the lawyer threw the case and he wouldn't follow my instructions. And what I want is a mistrial. So the Dr. Sears is saying, I want you to declare a mistrial that this whole thing was a botch because I was incompetently defended. And so the judge, we now know the judge is just playing with us, teasing us. He said, well, okay, what expert witnesses would you call? Well, we went crazy lining up expert witnesses. And if the judge had granted the mistrial, we would have had another civil trial. We had Dr. Tom Sunak, who would be, among other things, an expert on satire. I told Dr. Sears in the beginning satire, so not the same thing as political manifesto. And it's a very powerful defense to say the words mean something other than their surface meaning. We never did that. Okay, Sunak will take care of that. Then, about questioning the big six, Evan calls us. Well, we've probably got the world's greatest expert in the English language, who speaks English, Jeremy Rudolph, Michael Johns, Michael Hunt, who's an expert on the Talmud, a book that Dr. Sears frequently referred to in your war news. I think we have I may have missed one expert, and then we were lining up what we call witnesses of fact. These are not people who can say I'm an expert, but I can tell you what I know or what I saw. And we have one who's the head of an organization of German expellees, so 16 million who were ethnically cleansed at the end of the Second World War. He would be able to talk about the effect of Zionist hatred on Germans living in Canada, what it's like to live with this type of thing, and how your war news presented another point of view. And we were actually trying to find a couple more witnesses of fact. So we really had an excellent roster lined up. So then we finally got to court, and the judge said, well, just because you disagreed with your lawyer's strategy and because it didn't work, doesn't mean that it was incompetent, so he wouldn't give us a mistrial. And when he went on to sentencing, and that was a dramatic moment. The sentencing, I've been through a few cases, and the judge was very poker faced. And then suddenly he caught fire, and he said, if I had my way, you would get 18 months on each count, so basically 5 years. The Crown had asked for the maximum, which would be 6 months on each count to be served consecutively, which would be a year. Okay, the judge says if he had his way, he would give him 18 months consecutively on each count, which, if my math is correct, it would be 3 years. Anyway, it is a fairly long time for words, for non-violent expression. Some of your Negro gangs are shooting one another. You, fortunately, it's one another most of the time. We'll get a suspended sentence, or we'll get they'll get less than 3 years for actually blasting away at somebody. So then the judge said, well, I don't have much to guide me. I thought, spoke about a man named Salome Alelos, who was a skinhead, and this case is 1991. Salomir, I think, had a bit too much vodka one night, and went out with a spray paint can, and it wrote some choice things and a symbol from World War II on a synagogue. Well, this was a great media pamphlet. Cameras were there, and the politicians were practically weeping and denouncing hate, and Hitler's back in town, and the usual act. So finally, when Salomir went to court, in my opinion, ill-advisedly, he apologized to the Jewish community and said he was sorry. It didn't do him any good. He got 11 months. I'm sorry, he said he got 11 months in prison. So the judge said, well, that's the only thing I have to guide me. I thought, that wasn't even the same law. He was charged with what we would call a mischief under $5,000. No, vandalism. Okay. And that's a pretty severe sentence for vandalism, because let's face it, after all the photo ops, you know what they do? They sandblast the place the next day. It's not permanent. But anyway, he got 11 months for that. And the judge said, well, but only a limited number of people would have seen that. Whereas your war news was read by 300,000 people, issue after issue. The damage is far greater when it was on the internet. The damage to society is far greater. He was really on fire at this point. And so we really wanted to give him 18 months consecutively. He said, well, I'm not allowed to by the law. So he's sentencing him to 6 months consecutive, so that he's in your jail. And we should have known, because I had not heard it, but somebody beside me had heard it clinking. Well, these three cops had come in with the handcuffs and their guns and all that, which means they debriefed in advance. So they put the handcuffs on, and Dr. Sears turns to his fixed senses in front of his wife, his four-year-old son, and he hands his car keys and his cell phone to his wife. And he says, "But I'm keeping the crucifix." Only Sears can do this. He said, "Because, like my Lord and Savior, I will rise again." it was powerful. I mean, it really, this was not an act. This was not played for a laugh. The press just grinds its teeth with rage at the comparison to. Then he is a very much so a Christian martyr.
Okay.
He's not being burned at the stake, but he is suffering for the nonviolent expression of his views. And he told the judge earlier on in the one of these earlier sentencing episodes when we thought the judge might sentence him, he said, "Well, this is my church's Easter." He's Greek Orthodox, and this would be my Holy Thursday. And he said, "If you want to choose to send me to prison, like the Lord, I will go down, I will go into hell, but my lawyer will get me out again for appeal, and on Monday I will rise again." The press went bananas. I mean, and see, he's not afraid. Anyway, so that was so
he went to jail.
He went to jail for 5 days.
Okay.
Anything to do with the law in Canada is slow. He had a new lawyer, and the lawyer had prepared a notice of appeal. And what that means is you go into the Court of Appeals and you file the notice that we are appealing this. And then once the court stamps it, you run to a provincial court judge and say, "The Court of Appeal has our notice of appeal. My guy is in prison. I'm applying for bail." It wasn't filed on time, so he didn't get bailed out until the following Tuesday. So he's in prison for 5 days. And at the bail hearing, the Crown fought like a junkyard rat. The defendant is a serious danger to the community. He's a public danger. We're talking about a guy who writes jokes. Meanwhile, Tishon, who's been picked up for the fifth time for illegal possession of a handgun, he just gets bailed out. Anyway, so Sears is back out preparing the appeal, and we don't think the appeal will be heard until probably well into the next year.
So it's like a whole other case again.
That's a whole other case. But here the appeal will not be. It's not over. Well, let's have witnesses all over again.
Right.
It's did the judge make the right decision? And most importantly, I think, is was he correct in not declaring a mistrial? Because if we get a mistrial, we will have an opposition.
Now, okay, so basically on an appeal, you're appealing so you can have the mistrial.
No,
technically,
it could go several ways. You're appealing to say basically the judge's decision was wrong,
right,
which means you should be acquitted. Sometimes what the Court of Appeals will say, there should be another trial.
Oh, okay.
If the Court of Appeals accepts the incompetent defense, I think it'd be a big deal.
So you got to go through the door.
Oh yeah, this goes on and on. The story never ends.
Well, at least he's out.
Okay. He's out.
All right. Well, that's unbelievable. All right. So what about? I know there's other cases of people that are going through the same thing. Isn't there a couple of people?
Well, another hate law case that will be coming up in January is Bill Watcott. Bill Watcott's a preacher, and he's a, in some ways, he's like Dr. Sears, and he's very creative. He has a long history with the courts and has been to jail a number of times. And he said, the one thing I ever did that I should have gone to jail for, I didn't. He said he, when he was on drugs as a teenager, he stole a bus in London, Ontario, and went on a big joyride. He said, I should have gone to jail for that. He's been to jail a number of times for protesting abortion.
He's a Christian kind of.
He's a Christian, yeah. But that's not what he's on, what he will be on trial for. He's, for the last 10 years or so, been very critical of the LGBTQ agenda. And he's had a number of run-ins with the courts. But what happened in 2016 is he and some friends infiltrated the Toronto Gay Pride Parade. And he had, first of all, applied to join the parade as a Christian. They turned him down. So he then invented a group called the Gay Zombies for something, the Church of Marijuana. Mm-hmm. Now you think nobody would take that seriously. But these LGBTQ crowd are so, well, that's okay. They wouldn't take a Christian, but they take the Gay Zombies. So what he did is he got costumes and a half dozen other Christians in these kind of lime green bodysuits. They were the Gay Zombies. And they had tracks at Gay Pride Parade. And with no trouble, they got rid of them all, 3,500. And what the tracks basically said was what the Bible says about homosexuality. That's on one side. On the other side, it gave some scientific information, medical information from the Centers for Disease Control about some of the very bad results of homosexual practice, you know, anal warts and cancer and HIV. Some disgusting stuff. And they have a higher suicide rate, higher homicide rate, higher alcoholism rate, and so on. So in other words, maybe this would be some of you might not want to get involved with.
Yeah.
I do not understand how this could violate the law. But one of the last things that our former premier in Ontario did, that was the lesbian, she was defeated in the June election of 2018, but they don't immediately leave office, just like your president, there's a gap. Well, just before she left office, she and her Muslim Pakistani Attorney General charged Bill Watcott under the hate law. So he's charged with willfully promoting hatred against a privileged group, in this case, sexual orientation. And the Crown is out for blood. Unlike in the Dr. Sears case, they're proceeding by what they call indictment, which means he could get 2 years in prison. It's going to be a big battle. But this is not all that they've done to him.
No, is he representing himself?
No, he currently has a lawyer.
Okay, he is, okay.
It's almost always about money. And so he did get legal aid. So he's got a very well known lawyer. I'll say a good lawyer.
Yeah.
He's well known, and I don't think, because it's before the case, I don't want to say anything more about that. That's not the only way they tried to hurt him. A group of homosexuals brought a class action suit in against Watcott, asking for $104 million because of their the insults and the wounded feelings they felt and the upset as LGBTQ members, and here was this fellow handing out leaflets of their and I thought I've never heard of such a thing. Class action suits are more difficult in Canada to launch than in the United States, And among the other people who said they were part of this class action was the Liberal Party of Canada and the Prime Minister of Canada, because Wattock had attacked them and believed them as enabling this lifestyle or culture of death. The lawyer, the homosexual lawyer named Elliot, said is he wanted to this class action suit to include not only Wattock, the six gay zombies, and anybody who would help Wattock, if they'd given him an airline ticket for where he'd been to Vancouver, or if they put him out of their place or paid for the pamphlets or anything. Well, this is a very serious threat. Well, it was a typical Canadian result. The judge said, very reluctantly, I can't authorize this as a class action suit for very confident legal reasons. Okay. So, okay, you say, yay, the fire. Well, no, but the judge said the people who were aggrieved or offended the homosexuals should have the right to sue the Wattock and the gay zombies and any of the people who helped under another civil law. And so he ordered Wattock to give up the names of the gay zombies and his supporters. Wattock refused. He said, I'll go to jail. I will not rat them out. That's been appealed. And we're waiting for the appeal. But he is prepared to go to jail. And because what the homosexual lawyer made clear was, we're going to get you financially. Not just you, Wattock, who may not have any money, but if, a person who helps you. And that has scared a lot of the supporters, because it will say, you have a house, and you might suddenly become liable. It would be $404 million, but say it was $50,000. And everybody is co-liable. That means if you're the fellow with the house, they get $50,000 out of your mind. Wow. It is insane that the repression that's being inflicted on people. Well, there's another, I said, it's quite often we have setbacks, but we do have some victories. Bill Wattock lost the case before the British Columbia Human Rights Tribunal last December. He handed out leaflets against a transgendered creature who ran the provincial election, and the tribunal decided that he had made disparaging remarks about the LGBTQ crowd and exposed this poor dear, who's a politician, to hatred. And so Wattock was fined $55,000. That's being appealed. But at the same time, we became aware of another case where a transgendered thingy called Yaniv, or Jonathan Yaniv, an Israeli mother, I'm sure you're not surprised, and now thinks he's Jessica. And so Yaniv went to 20 Vancouver estheticians and asked for Brazilian wax. So he announced to them, I've become a woman, but I've got a penis. Would you give me a Brazilian wax? Well, three said, yeah, sure, come on over. He never went. 17 said, no, I'm not comfortable doing that. That's even took them to the BC Human Rights Tribunal. And we learned about that case just during the Wattock's case. And I tried, we were at Cafe, was intervening on Wattock's behalf. And I tried to bring that up, at least what we knew of it at the time. And I want to make the argument, this whole transgender thing is a form of insanity. It's mental illness. Mm-hmm. Fine, you're free to believe you're a man, you're free to believe you're a woman, you're free to believe you're Napoleon, you're free to believe you're a cat. I don't have to meow at you or call you emperor.
Right.
And I said, because this transgenderism is entirely subjective. I think I'm a woman. No, I don't actually, I think I'm the emperor. I said, now there's this fellow we've heard about, we of course, name not yet revealed, who's doing this to these estheticians. He's clearly, by his own account, a man, because that's the child. I have a penis, but I'm a woman. Forgive me when you do this. And see, what he was trying to do was shake them down. But I'm sorry, I didn't finish the story. So the ones who, the 17 who said no.
So he's trying to shake them down.
Yeah, so he complained that the university tribunal, well, three of them cried uncle or yanib or whatever, and it paid $2,500. So he dropped the case against that. It's shake down. Anyway, there's lots more drama along the way, but the one good thing was that this did come to the attention of some people in the press, and there was certainly one article, one writer, Rex Murphy with the National Post, who hammered it on a number of occasions, and I think the BC Human Rights Tribunal was really feeling the pressure, because most of these were immigrant women, yay, and they were working from home, and they were supporting their families, and it's a minimal wage.
If they were white women.
Well, would it have gone that way? Yeah. So, and also, Yanib had made some anti-immigrant comments online. So, anyway, the decision came down this week, and it was a good one. The Human Rights Tribunal threw out these cases, and also said that Yanib had operated in bad faith, and they actually awarded a small amount of money to settle these women for grief. But some of these women had been driven out of business. I mean, they just said, well, we can't operate like this. Mm-hmm. I mean, the what we have allowed these freaks to do.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was that's one we want.
Okay. All right, so now how about this week with the election? Okay, so now Trudeau gets back in. So what's up with that?
Well, I guess it is the glass half full or half empty. This man who is part of a culture of debt, Justin Trudeau, despite his good looks and winning manner, is a globalist. Is a cultural Marxist, and is pushing a culture of death. And by that I mean, he is a fanatic for abortion. You cannot be an elected member of the Liberal Party unless you're in favor of abortion. It used to be, there were some liberals who were pro-life. No. Okay, so he's for that, at that point, he's of course for massive third world immigration to replace it, so that's our death. And he's fanatical for the LGBTQ agenda. There's scarcely a gay pride parade in Canada he doesn't attend. You wonder why the prime minister, the chief executive, has so much time to march with the bazaar anyway.
Let me ask you, why? I don't understand. If he's so pro-abortion, why? What's the power of the Catholic Church? And I heard Canada was a real strong Catholic bastion. I mean, apparently not anymore.
Well, the church's leadership has simply refused to engage. If from the pulpit they announce that he basically should be excommunicated.
That's what I'm saying. I don't understand how you can get away with it.
So he's able to have it both ways.
Wow.
So anyway, the results of the election were that the Liberals came back with a minority. So there are, I think, about 155 Liberals in a 338-seat parliament. The Conservatives have, I believe, about 121. So Trudeau cannot pass legislation with just his party. He doesn't have enough votes. The Socialist New Democratic Party lost quite a bit of ground, despite their much promoted leader. He's the guy with the turban. They got 25 seats. The Separatist Bloc Québécois, I think, got about 30, and the Greens got 3, and one in the Independents got 1. So Trudeau will have to make deals with these parties. But he is weakened, and that's good. Not so good was what happened to what I thought was probably our best political hope in 40 years, and that was the People's Party of Canada. This was a populist party led by Maxime Bernier. He lost his seat, and did not elect anybody. The party did get over 300,000 votes, and I think is in a good position to grow. But the breakthrough we hoped to have did not occur, and the party suffered quite a bit from attacks on their rights to speak. Rally in the city I lived in, Hamilton, on the 29th of September, Maxine Bernier came to speak at a community college, and the Antifa showed up, about 100 of them, and they certainly disgraced themselves. They didn't stop the meeting, but they were trying to prevent an 81-year-old lady in a walker. She was trying to move her way in along with her husband, and three of them blocked her way. And some woman, hairy man with a bandana, shrieking about Nazis, no Nazis here, no Nazis, like she was like a mad woman. Eventually, others got the old lady in, but it was very effective on the social media to see this is your Antifa meeting up on all masks, of course. Well, then it was revealed that one of these people was a Syrian refugee, one of the ones Trudeau let in 3 years ago. And he's attended other Antifa gatherings. He was harassing the Trump mayoralty candidate Faith Goldie in the last election. So that became quite an issue. But just this week, the police have charged three people, including the ungrateful Syrian. In a sense, that was it's a bit of a victory because a lot of people got to see what anti-racism is really a code word for anti-white and anti-free speech. That's the street level. But we've also seen the more uptown level of anti-racism. And a member of the Canadian Anti-Hate Network, which is a relatively new organization, is Bernie Farber. Bernie Farber used to be the CEO of the Canadian Jewish Congress, and then had another outfit, and then more recently he's with this Canadian Anti-Hate Network. We wrote a column just recently that we have to do more to combat racism, and neo-Nazi parties should not be allowed in Canada. See, not only is the People's Party of Canada considered neo-Nazi, but there's a more even more populist party called the Canadian National Party, which I helped them get their registration. They're now a political party. So what Farmer's saying is, if you are on the wrong side of the political spectrum, you shouldn't even be allowed to run in an election. That this is a democracy. Well, another one of their allies is a journalist named Warren Kinsella. Well, he's a bit of everything. He's a lawyer, but he doesn't seem to practice. He runs something called the Daisy Group. And I always want to smirk because we talk about daisy chains. But anyway, the Daisy Group, I mean, what guy would choose a name like that for? It's a, sort of like a political public relations firm. You know, if you want political assistance, you go to the Daisy Group. Kinsella was revealed just before the election to have been hired by the Conservative Party to go on the social media and try to blacken the reputation of the People's Party of Canada, so that their leader would not get into the leadership debate on TV. He failed in that. Kinsella failed to achieve that goal, but they were putting out stuff on the social media, racist, anti-Semitic, the usual stuff. And Kinsella has had a reputation going back to the 1990s as a master of dirty tricks. In fact, he helped the then Prime Minister Jean Chrétien Cressingham won the 1994 election. He was one of the backroom boys. He even wrote a book about it, and he liked to call himself, "I'm the Prince of Darkness," you know, like a real dirty street fighter. And so here we have the more uptown types trying to interfere with the democratic process. Trying to prevent people from hearing one of the political leaders in a debate. Luckily, that failed. And I've got to say, the conservative leader looked so bad on the weekend. The press kept asking, "Well, did your party hire Kinsella's Daisy Group to pull off these dirty tricks?" And he said, "We never comment on who may or may not be a supplier." Well, the question is, did you or didn't you? If you didn't, just say no. Well, when you give a mealy-mouthed answer like that, that means you're right. free speech battle is engaged on many levels in this country. I think we're going to be in for some interesting times. We have seen a lot of good discussion in this election about immigration by the People's Party of Canada, which wants really considerable reductions and screening people for Canadian values. Like they want a person-to-person interview with each potential immigrant to find out, do you subscribe to our values?
And what do they bring to the table?
Yeah, what do you bring? Yeah. So, or, you know, if you basically think we're the great Satan or something, well, maybe there's some other country where you would fit in
better. Yeah, the United States, what they do.
Yeah, right.
All right, so it might be looking up in those things. I mean, so that's a good thing. All right, so basically, I think that pretty much covers it. We covered quite a bit. We'll just have to continue to watch, see what's going to happen in the Sears case. And Walcott, is that his name? Walcott?
Watcott.
And, that's all to come. So we'll just have to deal with that. Okay, well.
If I may say one more thing. I'm encouraged by the type of work you're doing and others, like Brian Drew and a whole slew of others. I'll probably leave out names I should recognize, Red Ice Radio, and many other good people. I'm running into young people, by that I mean roughly 18 to 35 to 30, who know far more than my contemporaries even today know. They are really educated. They know stuff. Like 10 to 20 years ago, the young people we were getting were largely, you might say, sort of skinheads. They didn't like immigration, but they didn't know a whole lot more. And often they didn't want to learn, and quite often they just kind of drift away. The people we're getting today know all.
Is that Linda?
Someone wants to talk to you.
For us.
What do you think it is?
She's sending
women. Okay. The people we're running across today are self-educated over the internet. And most of it are videos that they've seen. Right. There's now a critical mass of good material out there where you can become educated. Like a lot of my contemporaries, it was with great difficulty that they could see that there was something beyond immigration. They didn't like what was happening, but it was happening for a reason. And it wasn't just Trudeau the first or this Trudeau, but many of these issues are ideological enemies coordinate them. And a lot of people never got that or couldn't accept that there's a significant Jewish influence behind the Frankfurt School, behind the immigration invasion. It didn't just happen. These young people, they get it. Right. They're already there. You don't have to tell them. They know it. They get it. I think a tremendous tribute to those people who, you know, with very few resources and very little backing, have done such great work with videos, and yourself included.
Well, the problem is YouTube's
completely got rid of us all. I mean, you know what I'm saying? We can't go on YouTube, put anything on YouTube. And the only site that we can put stuff on now is called BitChute. And another one is Brighteon. And that's it. I mean, everything else we just get purged from.
I think one of the things we've got to do, almost like our calling card, just like I have mine, this is calling card here, that whenever somebody says, you know, we live in a free country, depending on how, what your mood is every day, say something, you believe that?
Let
them never tell us we live in a free country. You live in a somewhat freer country. But it's no longer the land of the free, and I'm not even so sure it's the home of the brave. The big corporations like Facebook,
Google,
YouTube, Google,
PayPal.
Persecutes dissent. Right. Wait a second, it's not a free country.
No, I know.
I think it's important to help awaken people. I kind of like Albert Schaefer's line about another issue. Said he very gently will look at somebody and say, "You don't still believe that, do you?" Mm-hmm. And that, I think that's part of our mission as missionaries.
Right. Well, we keep trudging on, and you're doing a good job up here, and we appreciate that. And I guess that covers all these points. I guess we went over a little more time-wise, but we're still good. Okay, folks, thank you for watching this video. I'm Jim Rizzoli, Paul Fromm, Diane King's over here watching, and we will talk to you another time. Bye now.
That was the interview I did with Jim Rizzoli earlier this week, I wanted to play a short commentary about the election by Laura Lynn Tyler Thompson, who is the People's Party of Canada candidate in Red Deer.
Hi, everybody. I've been going through my own post-mortem election dissection. What a fascinating season.
Well, this is a good deal longer than I expected. So this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me. Got to play a couple of tunes by Buck Owens for my somewhat short musical interlude tonight. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com.
Oh, the sun's gonna shine in my life once more. Love's gonna lift here again. Things are gonna be the way they were before. chance to be myself. I've spent a thousand miles of coming. Yes, I've worn blisters on my heels. Trying to find me something better here on the streets of Bakersfield.
Bakersfield. This is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning, 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe, the dauntless hero, came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Our fair dominion now extends from Cape Race to Nootka Sound. May peace forever be our lot and plenteous store abound. And may those ties of love be ours, which discord cannot sever, and flourish green o'er freedom's home, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save. forever.